Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Okay, today we're welcoming back Dr. Cassidy, who is a maternal mental health therapist. She specializes in parenting and, most importantly, specializes in moms. And today we are going to talk all about her new book called Mom Needs a Moment and what that's all about. And do dads need a moment too? We'll see. I just got your book in the mail. So I finally just got it in the mail and I'm so excited about it because I opened it up and I was like, mom needs a moment. She does.
Literally. Yeah.
Literally needs a moment. I feel like all anybody is talking about is the statement, mom needs a moment, but also feeling guilty about it. And then what do you do with that statement? So, I mean, of course, you have so many incredible credentials. You've been on BDA your own amount of times talking about a variety of different things. But let's talk about your new book and the wisdom that you're sharing in it.
Amazing. Yeah. My elevator pitch for it is for the mom that's like, I have so many triggers. I want to break these cycles. I constantly feel like if I could just get some space, like then I could figure it out. You're taking in all the parenting content. It resonates. You're like, yeah, I want to do those things. And then you get into those moments with your kids and you still feel triggered. You still feel reactive. Even if you're able to access the scripts, you're like, it's not dropping into it in this real, personal, authentic way because there's other stuff that didn't start with you that is showing up in these moments. And that's what the book's about. And I can't wait to talk about it with you.
So it seems that the title is genius, Mom Needs a Moment, but also it seems like if you're on social media or if you have a group of mom friends and you're talking to them regularly, the conversation oftentimes comes back to moms feeling exhausted, burnt out, and don't really know where to put that or what to do with that. Can you talk a little bit about how this book is going to provide some guidance for that overarching feeling so many moms are feeling?
1,000%. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that it starts probably with my own experience becoming a mom. So my oldest is 14, which is insane. But over 14 years ago, when she was born, came into motherhood, I was a therapist in training. Like, I really felt prepared. I went into the birth with, to be honest, a pretty rigid idea of what I wanted the birth to look like. And I can look back on that now and be like, you know what? I was just wanting to protect myself and my baby through control, through rigidity. That's like my anxiety would show up through this kind of perfectionist need to have it go a certain way, need to achieve control. And then as it often does, it didn't go as to plan per the birth plan. And then you don't have any moment or space or time to process that because then now we're just deep into sleep deprivation, trying to figure out how to be her food source, which again, I felt a lot of pressure for all of that to look a certain way. And I had some pretty dark moments with my own postpartum anxiety and intrusive thoughts where I just was like, I just want to escape. Like if I could just, go to a hotel room for a night and just have that night to myself where I could get a full night's sleep and not have this baby that I wanted to keep safe but felt kind of alien to me. I just didn't feel that immediate connection. I thought, quote unquote, that I should or that I was supposed to. And I was like, if I just get like some space from all of this, from her, which gosh, I felt so much shame around. If I could just get away, then I can just feel like myself again and come back in. But I didn't tell anyone that, and I didn't take that space because of the shame. That's what shame does. It took a long time. I finally opened up to one friend, and they just looked at me, and they were like, oh my gosh, same. And that was like such a balm to my anxiety and to that shame of feeling like I'm not the only one that feels this way. Maybe there are others. that became a bridge for me getting support. And then became the muse for all the work that I do today in my private practice working with moms as a therapist. And what I found over 10 plus years, it's been over a decade of doing this work, my gosh, 15 years, but in really working with moms, you know, it's been about 13 years. And I find that so many moms that walk through the door, they come in and they say something along the lines of, oh, if I could just get some space. I feel, whether it's because they feel really touched out or they just find that in the moment with their kid, there's so much happening or their calendars are just so filled and there's the pressure of this intensive parenting era to like optimize every moment. But so many folks were coming in and saying that they wanted, like they were just, if I could just get some space. So anyway, I became obsessed with space and like, yes, Project Hail Mary and like astronauts going to the moon space for sure. But this other type of space in parenting, I have a podcast now called Holding Space. My Substack is called A Little Space, Please. I now have a book coming out in June called Mom Needs a Moment. Yeah, Cassidy's into this idea of margins and space. And so over 10 years, I just started brain dumping into this Word document. And I had a medium tell me once that I was going to write a book after I defended my dissertation. And I was like, no, thank you. I'm so burnt out. I will never write another thing in my life. But a few years later, I was like, well, I feel a little more distance from that dissertation from my PhD program. Maybe I can do some more writing. So I just started pulling together some of the themes from all of my client sessions, my own experiences as a mom, my own work, my own therapy and working through triggers. And that became everything is in this book. Like I don't have courses. This is like what I walk my clients through. Obviously not a substitute for therapy, right? But these are the steps. It's identifying your triggers. It's identifying the cycles that didn't start with you, right? And for myself, that was looking at my own parents, my grandparents, the family history and some of the legacies that I wanted to maintain, but also some of the legacies I wanted to shift and change, and recognizing, processing, healing some of my own experiences as a kid, that when our kids come out and now we're here with them and they come out with all their feelings that they haven't learned to shut down or feel ashamed of or feel like they have to minimize, it was a lot, right? And it's a representation of my own work, my work with clients, and a ton of research.
And what's the overall consensus of, yes, moms need space, and how do moms get that space? Where do we locate the space?
Yeah, where is the space? Catherine's like, I'm looking at my calendar. There's literally no space.
No. Pencil it in.
Yeah, pencil it in. And actually, that is a part of it. It's like we actually have to protect margins as if it is our child's doctor's appointment, right? That thing that you're like, this is so important, right? Maybe it's an appointment for them to go get tested for their sensory sensitivities, or it's to go to a doctor's appointment because they haven't been feeling well, right? We would protect that space, right? We wouldn't let other things kind of jump in and continuously reschedule it, push it. I'm guessing you're probably protecting that space. And I think that what our children need, along with support for their sensory sensitivities or a doctor's visit for their illness, is a parent who has protected enough margins in their calendar to show up in a regulated state where they have actually gotten even a moment of margin to even process all that great parenting material they came across on Instagram or that podcast they listened to, right? Our brains are literally begging us for margins to process.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
So space and margins that I talk about in the book come out in a couple of different ways. For sure, it's just the calendar, right? I have this example of this magical calendar. If you could look at it and it populates everything you're doing in the day, and not just the appointments, but also the car ride where you're listening to that parenting podcast, or you're sending that voice note to a friend, or your child is in the car asking you obscure questions about life and death, right? Like just the moment that you spend on your phone scrolling and reading the emails, all of the time, all the paperwork you're filling out, all the things. Like if your magical calendar could populate all of that, where would there be any margins of space for your brain to take a beat and even just process what it just experienced, right? And our brains, we talk about this in the book, of why the brain desperately actually needs that in order for us to learn and grow and develop and make a plan and implement the plan and access things like creativity to integrate a new parenting strategy. Our brain's desperate for space. And it's funny because I talk about in there might be one moment on your calendar where you're not getting more pings of information coming in. Maybe the door is shut and you actually get that space and it's maybe taking a shower. And I don't think a shower is enough for self-care, but I think that most people could agree that some of their best ideas or moments of inspiration or like making connections happens when you're in the shower, when you just don't have more information pinging at you, right? Like that's what we're talking about here in terms of just the calendar, which I think is so difficult because we're also in this era of optimizing everything, this like intensive parenting era too.
Right. So when someone is listening to what you're saying and this idea that we need to be blocking off time for ourselves or a reset, couple questions. One, is that something that you are recommending moms do every day, once a week? Is everyone unique to their own mental stamina? Like what is the recommendation there?
No, it's a great question. I think this actually has to be a daily practice, but it doesn't have to be maybe what we're initially thinking it is in terms of this huge margin of space, right? And I want to get there and I promise I will, but I want to first name just like the immediate block that I think might come up for so many, which is, and you asked this earlier, right, is how. And I think we have to also name the idea of the default parent, the one who's carrying the invisible mental load and is doing a lot of that alone. And that is like hijacking all their margins. Yes, our phones are hijacking a lot of our margins. You go to coffee shop, everyone's not just waiting in line, like looking around, letting their brain receive whatever else is around them. They're looking at their phones and just like the constant pings. But we have to name that there's also, for a lot of women, a lot of moms, they're the default parent. They're carrying the invisible mental load. And it's really tricky for how to figure out how to activate support and how to share that load. So there's a whole chapter in the book about that as well. But when we talk about margins, I just shared an Instagram post last Tuesday, and I was like, here's how I protect my margins on a random Tuesday. And yes, I love the big things, right? Where it's like I was saying earlier, this daydream I had of going off and having like a night away at a hotel just for myself. Love that. Love that for moms. Love that for my clients. But what we also need is not to be so burnt out from the day to day that we're just waiting, holding our breath for a moment like that. So like for me on a Tuesday, protecting my margins might look like protecting 30 minutes before my kids are going to be picked up or going to be coming home from school if I am working from home. And protecting those 30 minutes, like my life depends on it, using that time to not take in more information, right? I love podcasts, obviously, but maybe I'm going to go for a quick walk and not listen to a podcast. Maybe it's, right, like a moment when between clients, like those 15 minutes where I could do notes, I could check my phone, I could do something, but maybe I'm going to close my computer and I'm 40 now, so obviously I'm into birds. I have a little bird feeder out here. Like maybe I'm just going to stare at the birds that are eating. Maybe I'm going to go outside, right? Like maybe I'm going to stand in line at the coffee shop for my matcha and not look at my phone. And it's just building these little moments of noticing this pull and this ping to like look for more information, to go to our phones, to optimize every moment, right? And to make that quote unquote productive. But reframing this, that actually our brains just need empty space. Mom needs a moment in order for her to protect her brain so that she can access regulation and process all the cool parenting content she's receiving and access things like, how do I creatively implement this? Our brains are begging for it. And I think that it can be in these small protected ways, right? Where we don't turn on a podcast or read a book or turn on our phone. I love those things too, but we also need space to just let our brains wander.
That's another thing I was going to ask. What is taking space might look different for so many different people. If it's walking outside, if it's doing a meditation, if it's just sitting in quiet. For a lot of people that have 30 minutes to themselves, it might be scrolling. It might be listening to a podcast. So like, what is the correct way? Since you're a therapist, you know how the mind works, what the mind needs and what the brain needs. But what is the correct way for someone to take the space that they need to kind of give their brain that break? Because it's definitely not scrolling on Instagram or reading comments. That's not good for our brains. We know that.
Right. And let me just name it off the bat. I love a good TikTok scroll. And like, what I am not perfect at, but what I've learned to notice, and we talk about this in the book in terms of becoming more embodied and just living more in our body versus just swirling in our brain, right? Which I think a lot of us oftentimes are. But noticing in our body the signals from our body that let us know, hey, I think it might be time to stop the doom scroll, right? Or we're feeling so overstretched right now and so overwhelmed, and our brain has so much information overload, and we've been struggling in this particular situation with our kid that we're trying to figure out. It's like noticing those signals from our body, from these parts of us, like anxiety or overwhelm or frustration or rage or anger. It's noticing those signals from our body that signal to us, this might be a moment to take that margin. For me, a lot of my work looked like understanding that I have a little drill sergeant inside of me that is connected to my anxiety, is connected to my perfectionism and my need to achieve and optimize and be productive. And this part of me is really just protecting a much more vulnerable part of me. And that didn't just start in adulthood, right? When I think about myself as a little kid and when I've done my own EMDR and my own work around these things and understanding my parents' context, right? And like, they were also the children of my grandparents, and understanding all of that history. For example, my mom is a Hispanic woman who's a judge. In order to get to where she is now, actually, your dad was the one who made her a judge, by the way. Yeah. When you're, oh my gosh, I feel like I forgot. I completely forgot about that until just right this moment. Yes. In order for her to get to that position though, she, as a woman of color in white male dominated spaces, there was no room for error. She had to be perfect. And that followed her home, right? That protection. So she never apologized, but I also now, and you know, I really saw her as perfection, and I still do idolize her. But it's taken so much time for me to understand her context and that she's not perfect. And for her and I to have these conversations, my gosh, the other day she told me, you know what, to my youngest, I think grandma needs a moment. And she took a moment, and I was like, you know what, this is all worth it. I love this for you, mom, that you are getting to that place of recognizing you deserve space because you don't have to always be on. My dad grew up with a lot of financial hardship and financial insecurity. His way to get out of that was through achievement and good grades and getting scholarships so he could go to school and achieve becoming a public defender as he did. And when I look at my context and I see little me and all of that, and I see all these pictures and videos of me as a little one with all my trophies, and everything was about the achievement. And when I became a mom and I was like, wait, hold on, how do you be a straight A mom? Oh my gosh, there's no gold star. This is messy. This isn't some project I can optimize and achieve. That was really disorienting to me. And so what I learned through my own work, right, was that these parts of me, they live in my body, they send signals to me. It was like developing a relationship with these parts of me, that when they popped up and when these parts were like getting really anxious about certain things or super irritable and it was coming out as postpartum rage, there's a story there. There's this part of me that's trying to give me information about how it's learned to survive in the world and in relationships. And it wasn't until I identified those things, identified those triggers, contextualized them, because that really helped me be more compassionate towards these parts of myself, and then began to show up differently with my kids and be able to notice, oh, my body's signaling to me, it's time to put my phone down. It's signaling to me, I'm going to go outside and just put my feet in the grass and look at the way that the shadows play in the leaves, like go for a walk and notice all the crows around me, all the little baby birds sing the songs. Like, it's just to notice these little things, and not just in the world around me in these present moments where I get this space to myself, but it translates then back into my kids, where all of a sudden I am more rejuvenated, rested, resourced, so much more able to stay calm, connected, and regulated and present with them.
When you talk about taking space, so let's say it's 30 minutes a day, a mom can take the 30 minutes, carve out.
And we're gonna put that in your calendar, and we're gonna protect it like it's pencil a kid's it. Appointment. Yeah, pencil, put it in pen. You can't erase it. Yeah.
You mark out 30 minutes of your day every day to just have your moment. For someone who's wondering, okay, if I'm gonna take off the plate, answering emails, calling somebody, scrolling on Instagram, TikTok, whatever the thing is that's on your device, can you give three quick options for someone to choose from, or more than that, of what you can do in those 30 minutes that's good for your mind, body, and soul to reset yourself before you re-enter parenting?
Totally. A couple of my favorites, and we've named some of these already, is getting outside. And I recognize that in some seasons, in some locations, there might not be easy access to sidewalks, right? The sun might not be out for months. And I know that those are very real things. But as often as we can, anything that we can do outside and just really note, I'm looking out my window right now, like really like noticing little things, right? Whether it's the clouds or the way that the shadows play through the leaves on the ground or the birds. You know that birds only sing when they feel safe. So if you hear bird song, it's because the environment feels safe to that bird. And just like even noticing that feels so cool to like pay attention to those things for me. Another one, I think you're going to love this one. I love to lay down and like pat my chest and have any one of my pets lay on my chest. And just, I have a cat that will come, like only on her terms though. Like I can't schedule it with her. She has to just determine when it's for her time. But she'll come and she'll lay on my chest and she'll be purring. And she'll do it while, it's so funny, she'll do it while I'm scrolling. I always take it as a signal. Turn off your phone, just be right here. Or my dog, right? And then if you don't have a pet, maybe it's a weighted blanket, right? I think it's finding something that feels grounding. We talk in the book about a lot of different examples of different sensory things that we can do to also regulate our nervous system and signal to our nervous system that we're safe. And then a third one, and this is one that sometimes we'll walk through as a precursor to EMDR, which is one of my favorite approaches to use with clients in working through triggers or identifying triggers and processing trauma. So we would do this butterfly hug where you cross your arms and you have your arms across from each other and just doing these little slow taps back and forth. And then I love to take my brain to a safe place. The brain is such a double-edged sword, right? I could be sitting in my home totally safe and my anxiety could take me somewhere that is worrying about something and my body will respond as if it's happening. And there's a lot of research that indicates this. They've done a lot of studies and the brain is quite powerful in those ways. We can use that to our advantage. So if I can't get outside, I'll maybe lay down or I'll sit back in my chair and I'll close all the devices and I'll just start doing a few slow taps back and forth. And I'll imagine a safe place. And it could be real, imagined. It could be a real place you've been to, but just like the idealized version of it. And I really tap into my senses, what I would hear, smell, feel up against my skin. What's the weather, right? Mine is like a little cabin in the woods with a creek and lots of animals around. And my bed is in that cabin though. I love heat. So like a heating pad and like a just cozy crackling fire and just like really bringing my mind there with some of those slow taps. And then breath is something that we always have access to. And I know it can be tricky for some folks depending on whether they have asthma or ever. I think breath is such an individualized experience. For me, I find that if I extend my exhale after an inhale and I make a little shushing sound at the exhale, so like this. My body is almost trained now to know how to do this. I like immediately, my shoulders drop. The benefit of that shushing sound, there's some science around it too in terms of what it activates in our body, but also babies love it. So when I was with my third, I actually feel a lot more prepared for this. And when I would get dysregulated, I would do that. And the shushing would also calm her. So we were co-regulating. My kids know now when I do that kind of breath, it's like, oh, mom caught herself. I'm repairing all the time. And sometimes it's like, it's with my breath. And then I'll say, you're right. I caught myself there. Like I was, got a little triggered there.
I think these are all really awesome tips for people who want to know what to do in that time that's not busying yourself. Because as moms, we think, oh, I have a window of time where my kids are at school or they're at an activity or a play date or whatever. And you're like, okay, I have to go right to my to-do list of things to get done. And then your moment for yourself is gone. I'm a mom. And so I appreciate the title and the subject matter of this. In your practice, do you see this coming up for dads or is that not a thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is in its own ways, right? You're like, is this not a thing? I mean, are they just like, I think that dads can be a lot more willing to take that space for themselves because just those are the messaging that they've received in our society might not make them feel as ashamed for taking that space, right? There's no shortage of Instagram reels and TikToks making fun of dads sitting on the toilet, you know, just for like a very, very long time. And yet, actually, I shared that I had my dissertation and I was all burnt out from writing and it took me a while to get back to writing. My dissertation was actually on looking at postpartum depression in dads specifically, in the non-birthing partner as well. And that's because my husband experienced that and it was something that we were totally unaware of. We were both struggling. And what was so interesting is he was struggling. And when he went to doctor's appointments with me and such, I was assessed for postpartum depression, not anxiety, unfortunately, which is what I was experiencing. But in all these appointments, while I was being assessed for that, at least, people would then turn to my husband and be like, and are you getting up in the middle of the night? Kind of like teasing him, but he was actually struggling. And right, like patriarchy hurts men too. I think it creates a situation in a society where men don't feel like they can talk about their vulnerabilities. Our systems might not check in on them, right? And they might feel that pressure to just provide, but also now there's maybe some more pressure to be more involved, but they didn't have a strong model for that. So absolutely, dads need a moment too. And actually, what I've learned from my husband and I, right, is he'll take moments where he does have sensory processing sensitivities. So he'll have headphones on and he'll go do his thing. And it used to drive me nuts until I realized actually when he gets that space, he comes in a lot more regulated, a lot more able to be playful and integrated with them. But it does also take partnership to feel like, I'm not just carrying the invisible mental load that society has deemed is my job, right? That we're sharing the load of all this. And so the book is written for moms because that is my lived experience and the majority of the clients that I work with. But there are some chapters in here that I imagine moms would really want their partners to read, especially when it comes to figuring out their cycles and triggers and then how to share the load together.
I love that. I think that it's like, it's a conversation and it's good for people to also have awareness and be able to include their partners in the discussion of how to take the time where you can factor that in. And also the mom being able to say like, okay, I can get better about taking a moment for myself. I can always tell when Chris will say to me, you want to take a little bit? You want to take a moment? I'm like, no, I don't need to take a moment. But it really is like a way that partners can show their connection to you and also their sense of being like, take some time, take 15 minutes for yourself. Totally. And it's also working through the guilt that you have as a mom of being like, I think dads have a better time, which I think is something to admire in dads, that they feel okay going to go pee without the children coming with them.
Right. Or without announcing it to everyone, they're going to go take a shower. You know,
yeah. like, are you good for a minute? They just go, for moms, it's like, oh, I don't do that. So it's like, but I love this book. I love that you're talking about something that you're so passionate in and that also that you have so much research and experience with your own practice and your own experience being a mom yourself. And I think this book will be exciting and great to be able to have moms read and also partners read and just have awareness of taking some time for yourself, and it's okay.
Totally. And really, I will say this, that I really believe it is a parenting book, but for the parent side of things, right? Like there's a huge chunk of this book that is actually about also the space in those moments with your kids. Now that you know your triggers, we've identified the triggers and cycles. When your kid triggers you, how do we create that space between that trigger and how we respond, right? How do we have space outside of the moment to really understand how we want to show up and how we want to creatively integrate all the parenting tools in these different seasons with our kids, right? And so this is also very much in the moment with your kids when they're not listening, when they're defiant, when your teenager is upset about something, right? And like how to continue to build connection capital with them while also creating space between those triggers and how we respond so that we can stay connected in the moment too.
I love that. Well, thank you so much. This was awesome. And I'm so excited for your book to come out and for people to get their hands on Them Needing a Moment.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Catherine.
Thank you.